And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome into another episode of The Buffalo Beat. My name is Joe Biscaglia. With me is my podcast co-host, Matthew Fairburn. Thank you for listening to us, however you are doing so, whether it's on The Athletic Podcast Player or on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, any one of the other free avenues. We thank you very much for joining us, and we are into off-season mode. Now, when we last left you, we gave you our marathon pod, our first entry into the offseason and exactly what the Bills might be looking at. And we got into the nitty-gritty with a lot of different situations, positions, where there could be some turnover. There was a lot to chew on. So we're going to kind of stay along similar lines in this episode because, I think that's what everyone around the league and certainly people that follow the Bills, what the Bills are going to do this offseason to try and sustain enough to where they can potentially get to the Super Bowl and also try to improve, all while dealing with the salary cap being what it is. Now, there is a slight update to the cap. ESPN's Adam Schefter reported that some execs are thinking along the lines of 180 to 181 million. We always talked about the clairvoyant Brandon McManus saying that he believed it would be around 185. So it seems like it should be somewhere above that 175 million floor, which is good news for every team, including the Bills, but also the potential for a little bit more flexibility when they get into the offseason. So where I kind of wanted to start this conversation, Matthew, is, you know, about we talked about a lot of the players and the moves last time around. I think I want to first go into what could be the most important move. And I think it's probably a different conversation for both of us, what we view to be most important for them going into this offseason. But if you had to pick one thing that they need to get done this offseason, what would it be and why?
I think I start with a tight end, believe it or not. I think they've got
okay. Yeah.
They've got some issues that they need to address. And I think anytime a team, you know, only one team wins the Super Bowl, so every team that ends their season early is, you know, we already hear the panic mode a little bit and, you know, dissecting all the problems. You see it with the Chiefs even, you know, people trying to figure out what was wrong with them, even though, you know, same with the Bills. They just ran into a good team at, you know, that had a good game plan and was better on that day. And that's why I think the Bills should be aggressive about upgrading their offense and continuing to lean into that strength with another playmaker to give them a different option at that position, give them different options on offense, period. I think certainly keeping this offensive line together and upgrading it in the right spots will be a priority. Revamping the defensive line will be a priority. They need another cornerback, most likely. They have to figure out what's going on with Matt Milano. But I keep coming back to tight end, and it's not necessarily give up on Dawson Knox. It's add to what they have. You know, Lee Smith is considering retiring. Tyler Kroft's contract is up. Tommy Sweeney missed the whole year with a heart condition after getting COVID. So outside of Dawson Knox, there's not much at that position right now that they can count on. So I think you saw it last offseason when they tried to get Greg Olsen. You know, they know that they need to have another option there. Dawson Knox very well might develop into a solid player. He made some big plays last year. He had a ton of injuries. Wasn't a very typical year for him, given that he got COVID and a concussion and a calf injury. Plus, he's a guy that needed a lot of runway to begin with because his first touchdown of his football career came in the NFL. So, you know, it's like he's a guy that had a lot of room to grow. So I don't think they should give up on him. But if you add another tight end to this offense, you're looking at like a team that can run, you know, some 12 personnel. You can move Dawson Knox around, put him in the backfield. I feel like he could be a guy that could, move around a little bit that way. And we've seen Brian Daboll adjust his offense to what he has personnel-wise. If they do have to move on from John Brown and you're looking like a team that runs three receivers instead of four more often, then, you can mix in some two tight end sets and kind of move yourself around as an offense. Jonnu Smith will be out there in free agency if the Titans don't bring him back. Gerald Everett will be out there. I think about a veteran because getting another rookie, the Bills have seen what it takes to kind of get a rookie up to speed. Even the best rookie tight ends take a little while to become, you know, impact players at the position. So while you're banking on some development from Dawson Knox, don't put all your eggs in that basket. Go out and get another playmaker. This is going to be a passing team. I know the running game is getting a lot of attention. They need to be able to run the ball better, but lean into your strength. And, you know, those two teams in the Super Bowl had big time tight ends. And, you know, Travis Kelce tore up the Bills. You're not going to find Travis Kelce. There's only one of him, but having a little bit more of a counterpunch when teams, you know, can take away the outside threat. I think, you know, it's something that I just think this offense is lacking, a weapon that Josh Allen hasn't really had early in his NFL career.
Yeah, I'll agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, when you look at how the Bills offense kind of evolved in 2019, Allen was looking for Dawson Knox quite a bit. And he made some big plays, you know, that play down the sideline against the Bengals in 2019 when he stiff-armed the guy. I mean, that was the marquee Dawson Knox play. But this past year, kind of a weird year for him. Got COVID, suffered, I believe it was a hamstring injury. I don't know that for sure. It was a lower body injury. I do recall.
He had a calf at one point.
Calf. That's right. That's
he
right.
had a hamstring his first training camp. He's had some little things that pop up for him, you know, year after year that kind of have slowed him down a little bit. And he didn't get the ball a lot this year because you have four receivers. You're not going to get a ton of opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. Dawson Knox kind of just fell to the wayside a little bit, and it seemed like Allen wasn't really looking for him all that much. You know, a lot of that had to do with the emergence of Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley becoming an even bigger piece of the offense. But even still, Dawson Knox, when he was out there, just wasn't a huge part of the game plan. I also think his blocking was just all over the place this year, and that's a big piece of the puzzle for tight ends. It's not just what can you do in the receiving game, it's how can you block consistently. And there were a lot of times where he was just a mess blocking. There were some reps where he was really good and he showed potential, but that overall consistency just wasn't there for him. So yeah, you keep developing him and see what you got, because he was kind of an unfinished raw product that they brought in to begin with as a late third round pick. And like you said, it takes tight ends a while, but they do need to find a little bit more production. And I'm right there with you. Lee Smith, I mean, even if he doesn't retire, there's no way you can justify putting $2.25 million on the books in a cap-strapped year for Lee Smith, no matter how much of a veteran leader he is. I just don't know that you can justify that. So he's probably gone. Croft is gone. Tommy Sweeney, like you said, is up in the air. You know, you brought up Jonnu Smith, which is a guy who's getting some buzz within the fan base right now. I'm going to bring up a name that I don't know that fans are going to love the idea of, but because of his last year, but Zach Ertz, I think, is someone that probably fits what you're talking about here. A veteran tight end that knows how to make an impact on an offense. He was frustrated in Philly last year. He's got 1 year left on his deal. I believe it's for a little over $8 million. So if you can make things work with your cap, then you can do that. But that's probably around the range that you're going to have to sign a Jonnu Smith to anyway. So to me, that's just a way for them to kind of get the best of both worlds, where you have this developing young tight end and you don't have to commit long term and big dollars and guaranteed money to a veteran through a free agent contract. And it seems like the Eagles just want to move on, and you could probably get him for a pretty low cost, whether it be a sixth or seventh round pick, regardless if it's this year or the next.
They might even cut him.
Right, exactly.
They could save about $5-ish million if they cut him. It's not
right.
The best scenario, but like you said, they might just be wanting to move on. And if they are,
exactly,
then maybe you get him on a prove it deal, and you know, he can, you know, I'm sure, you know, unlike past years, a guy like him probably would want to be a part of this offense. You know, that's the advantage that they have, is that now a Greg Olsen type, not that Greg Olsen wasn't seriously considering playing here before, but he'd consider it a lot more. You know, the tiebreaker of Seattle and Russell Wilson, you might get that now with Josh Allen, the way this offense played.
Yeah, and if they thought Greg Olsen was a good idea, you can be damn sure they think Zach Ertz is a good idea. Because Zach Ertz, regardless of how his last season kind of unfolded, you know, he wasn't as dynamic of a playmaker as he once was, but he's still a savvy tight end. He knows how to find the soft spots in his own. He's a good blocker, so you can keep him on the field for three downs if you want to. He's used to playing kind of a two tight end role and sometimes coming off the field. So there's still a role available for Dawson Knox. I look at that type of player to be someone that could be of big time interest for them, as long as, and the big caveat here is, as long as they get all their ducks in a row with the cap. And they will have some help by the fact that there's going to be probably at least $5 million more than that floor of what the NFL first put out there. But even still, they have to make some difficult decisions, and they have to realize who is worthwhile in 2021, who is not, and try to restructure some contracts along the way. So there's a big, big formula to get that way. But yeah, I think adding a tight end is right up there. And a veteran one is a good one, just because you want to be able to take advantage of this window. And with Josh Allen being on the final year of his rookie deal, this is your last opportunity to do so with a high-priced tight end if you want to do that. So I think it all kind of adds up into that equation. But that said, I do think making sure that the offensive line, or at least having four starters heading into the draft, and at least a depth option that could start if you need him to, I think that would supersede the tight end. But it seems like they have a pretty easy formula to get there with having that by that time. So that way, I don't think it should be too big of a problem with adding a tight end with the salary cap problems they might have.
Yeah, I think when I look at it, it's different than past years where, you know, they have one or two glaring needs, you know, and you kind of thought they should address them in both free agency and the draft. The problems this year are more minor and more, you know, tinkering with the roster. And I think offensive line, I think it's probably the most pressing question of how do they fit the puzzle pieces together. And, you know, like we talked about on the last show, what they, you know, decide to do with their scheme and what that means about who stays, who goes. And I view that as priority number one in the draft, almost regardless of what they do, because they haven't drafted much at that position, period. Since Sean McDermott got here, Deion Dawkins, Cody Ford, and Wyatt Teller are the only three offensive linemen that they've drafted. And, you know, I think Cody Ford could still become a pretty good player, but, you know, that's not set in stone. He doesn't even have a position at the moment. You know, Brandon Bean essentially said he'll be a starter, but they don't know where. So, you know, they have some questions to answer there. But I think the days of them throwing free agency money at that position, other than trying to keep their own, you know, they're going to have to try to get some value plays, even, you know, more so than they have in the last few years, because I think it's time to start drafting and developing up front a little bit. You know, they developed Ike Butker. They drafted Wyatt Teller. Somebody else developed him. But I think that 30th pick, you know, I think they should zero in on the offensive line. Maybe, you know, we'll see what happens in free agency. If they lose Matt Milano, maybe there's a linebacker that becomes available, maybe the right cornerback at that spot. But that's kind of a good sweet spot for offensive linemen. You know, interior offensive linemen is even a decent value at 30. And like you said, if they have four starters going in, or even five in pencil, and you bring in a rookie that can compete, they've seemed to ease those rookies into action along the offensive line. Deion Dawkins split time his rookie year. Cody Ford split time his rookie year. Wyatt Teller eventually just took over in his rookie year, but that offensive line was a train wreck. So, you know, getting a high pick, you know, along that offensive line, because protecting Josh Allen will be number one. You know, once you pay him the big money, you're going to have to hit on some draft picks up front, because you can't just shovel your cap space onto the offensive line in free agency, because there's not as much of it to go around when you're paying a quarterback the money that Josh Allen will make, and you're paying, presumably at some point they have to give Stephon Diggs a raise, you know, and quite a few other guys will come up, you know, in that department as well. So yeah, I think the needs fall into different buckets this year. You know, a tight end could be something that puts this offense over the top, you know, in a big game. But, you know, foundationally, when they're looking at the draft in the long term, you know, figuring out those puzzle pieces on the offensive line will be a big deal, because I think a lot of the shuffling around they did this year and a lot of the, you know, pieces moving in and out is part of what hurt them in the running game at times. And, you know, that's something that you have to think they're going to put a little bit of a priority on the running game, because Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean both talked about it. And, you know, I don't think they're going to become a, you know, run heavy team necessarily, but I don't think they want to have the same inconsistency and, you know, lack of reliability from the running game that they had in 2020.
Yeah. And I think that's a good place to start. You brought up Cody Ford and him not having a position. I think the only reason that he doesn't have a position from Brandon Bean right now is because all of their offensive tackles not named Deion Dawkins is an unrestricted free agent going into this offseason. So he wants to maintain that flexibility. Like, if Darrell Williams was under contract going into next year, you can be darn sure Brandon Bean is saying, oh yeah, Cody Ford's a starting guard for them moving forward. Or if they knew that they would get an offensive tackle with their first round pick and they would factor in, you would tend to think that they're going to go, okay, Cody Ford's a guard. But they just don't know with the draft how it's going to play out. And especially being at 30, there are just so many different variables that you can't really depend on it. So they're smartly not committing to a position. But even Sean McDermott during the year was like, look, at some point you have to stop moving a guy around. And I think they got to that point with Cody Ford last year. They liked the move inside. He obviously looked more comfortable inside. So that is a piece. And I also think that Cody Ford is a significant piece to help the running game do a lot better, because where he struggles as a pass blocker sometimes, he makes up for it as a run blocker. I think his physicality is exactly what they're looking for. And if they get to pair him next to Dawkins moving forward, I think that's something that they are really looking forward to seeing, if the run game can get going behind those two guys, because they like to really run to the left, among other things. But along the rest of the offensive line, the one area I have kind of circled back on and maybe, well, I've changed my mind actually on it when evaluating the case and what they could do, what they have done, is the whole Mitch Morse thing. And, you know, it's all because of the cap strapped year. And while I think this coming year will probably be his last in Buffalo, just because they could save just a ton of money in 2022 by cutting him. But I just look at his situation, and you look at how much they could potentially save, which when you account for the top 51 contract that would have to replace it, you would be saving around, I believe it was around $4.06 million. Now, if you were to do a very simple contract restructure with Mitch Morse's contract, where you convert the majority of his base salary into a signing bonus that you can prorate over this year and the next year, the final 2 years of his contract, then you're sitting there thinking, you're sitting there and you would save upwards of $3.02 million on this year's cap, somewhere along those lines. And the difference between restructuring and cutting is only $1 million. So to me, not only for Mitch Morse, the incentive is, okay, you're going to get paid up front here and you're going to be guaranteed to be on the roster for the year. So that's why you want to do the restructure. And the incentive for the Bills here is that you keep a starter, you're only sacrificing $1 million for what you would need, what you would get by cutting him. And you're making sure that you have at least a starting caliber option, if not a starter. Let's not forget that Brandon Bean said Mitch Morse played really well. I know we really focused on the last podcast about the scheme fit and everything, and I think that's important long term. But right now is about getting through 2021 with the cap at being what it is. And that's why I've kind of done a 180 on this thing, because if they can get him to a restructure, that changes the game. And that gives them at least Morse, Ford, and Deion Dawkins as starters going in. You'll still probably have Ike Butker, as long as he doesn't get signed to a ridiculous restricted free agent contract. They'll probably bring back one of John Feliciano or Darrell Williams. I would anticipate it's Feliciano. And so that way, from there, all you need is a tackle. And this draft just so happens to be flush with offensive tackles. Dane Brugler has 7 offensive tackles in his top 46. So it would make me believe there's at least one of those guys available at 30, if not later than that. So a lot to chew on, I know, but I don't know that I know we talked a lot about Morse potentially going, but upon further analysis, it doesn't totally add up for him to go. What do you think about that?
The thing that's always given me pause with Mitch Morse leaving is that you need to replace him. So,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
the money that, you know, there were a lot of signs the last few years, I guess, of, you know, in terms of, you know, when he didn't play that, you know, for that short stretch, and, you know, the way this team loves Feliciano and all that, that he had fallen out of favor a little bit. But the cap savings isn't, you know, as obvious as it is with, you know, John Brown, Vernon Butler,
right,
Quentin Jefferson. And you have to replace him in some way. So you move, it would depend probably on how they feel about Ike Butker as much as anything. You know, assuming John Feliciano comes back, which he sounds like a guy that wants to come back.
Yeah. He's going to.
And, you know, at whatever number, I don't think it will be too cost prohibitive. And so you move him over maybe to center. You know, you have to be confident in what you're going to get at guard out of Ike Butker. He seems more comfortable on the left side, so Cody Ford would probably have to be your right guard, which would probably be, you know, not bad. I think he'd be okay over there. But, yeah, that's the only way the financials add up to me, because then you're like, you're actually saving that money. Otherwise, right. If you're going out and trying to replace him, you know, and maybe that's what they say, like $3-4 million, you know, whatever they can save, they can go find another Darrell Williams. You know, if they, you know, that's the question they have to answer, is where's that money going? Because if it's just going to another center, well, mm-hmm. you know, are you going to find somebody that much better than Mitch Morse for, you know, those dollars? Probably not.
I think it would just be going to Feliciano, honestly.
Well, there's that too, right? So, you know, would they rather have Feliciano long-term than Mitch Morse? Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm. But they're not committed to Mitch Morse long-term. It's one more year, like you said, at most. And so I think you just have to play the opportunity cost game here a little bit and wonder what you're, are you really going to upgrade there? And they might think that Feliciano is a better center than Mitch Morse. And let's not forget the reason, you know, people make that benching out to be a short-term thing, but that's just because Cody Ford got hurt and, you know, made their decision easy, and it made it easy to kind of quiet everything down with that. I think Mitch Morse played pretty well this year. I think he's still a really good center, and I don't think you're going to find better than him. You know, with those savings.
They would be worse if they cut him and still brought back Feliciano, because you're not finding a player at Morse's caliber for the savings you would have just by cutting him and bringing back the one guy. You would have to be trusting either Butker or a rookie or multiple rookies along the offensive line.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I keep coming back to the one line that McDermott kept echoing throughout his postseason or his after the season press conference, was that they need to do what they can to bring the band back together and then add to it. And that to me doesn't mean wholesale changes. It means probably saying goodbye to some veterans where you have the depth. But you know, the one place that the Bills don't have depth right now is along the offensive line. I mean, if you look at what they have along their depth chart with players under contract heading into it, it's Deion Dawkins, Ryan Bates, Cody Ford, Mitch Morse, Jordan Devey, and Trey Adams. That's it. So that would be essentially creating another hole for only... And I keep going back to this contract restructure idea, because it would only be the difference of $1 million. And you would still get the benefit of savings if you just convert a base salary into a signing bonus. It's really simple math. So as long as they could get that done, keeping Mitch Morse just makes all the sense in the world to me. And then you figure things out. I think the one thing with Feliciano, he's so gung-ho about Buffalo that I think he would sign something that would completely help the team, as long as he gets paid, of course. But he could sign something in the first year to where they manipulate it, where it's a low base salary that's guaranteed, but it's a bigger signing bonus, and you have some guaranteed money in the second year of the base salary. So that way he could sign for essentially, let's say, a 3-year, $21 million deal. And get like $9 million guaranteed. He could essentially do a $6 million signing bonus. The first year base salary is $1 million, which is guaranteed, and then the extra $2 million would be part of the base salary that would be guaranteed as well in the second year. And you know what that would do? That would create a cap hit of around $3 million in his first year, which is completely doable to get all their stuff done with the cap. So yeah, they can definitely have their cake and eat it too here with those two guys, and especially with Feliciano. If you envision him to be the center long term, you keep Morse around, because if you're signing him to be your center, that's going to cost you more. If you're signing him to be your guard in 2021, that gets you savings. So that's why I think this all kind of comes to the same conclusion for me, which is Morse stays as opposed to goes.
Yeah, I think the conflicting ideas in my head have always been the way they've treated Morse versus what, you know, I think you and I both think of him as a player.
Yeah. Right.
And that's,
he's good.
That's sort of been the, you know, the conflicting ideas in my head, everything that happened midseason versus, you know, the fact that he's a pretty good player. So I think even, you know, you think about the long-term, you know, puzzle of the offensive line. The one guy I'm really interested in who could, you know, kind of be a wild card in this is Ryan Bates, because
yeah,
if they develop, you know, if they feel good about what they've developed there, that solves a problem for them somewhere, because he can play kind of all over. They seem to like him at tackle, but he's played some center. So that's another guy. I mean, that's part of sustaining success that they talk about all the time, is developing these players that can step in and, you know, let you part ways with a guy like Darrell Williams. And the other thing I think about, too, is that you keep Mitch Morse around for another year. If you're able to get the restructure done, and, you know, $1 million difference is not worth losing Mitch Morse if you can get
exactly
him to agree to that. But then you go out and you draft a center / guard in the third, fourth round, develop that guy for a year and figure out who fits where. Does the drafted player become your center or a guard? And does Feliciano move into center? Whatever works. But that's where, you know, stockpiling some talent, some depth, you can't just do what they've done basically since 2018 and throw a bunch of money at a, you know, whole bunch of free agent offensive linemen and see what happens, because they need to hit, you know, they need to have a higher batting average. The beauty of the strategy that they had was they didn't need to have a high batting average. You know, Spencer Long and Brian Winters didn't work out, but John Feliciano did. Darrell Williams did. So it was like, you know, Ty Insecki, I would say, didn't totally work out, but, you know, they had hits elsewhere. So now they just need to have a higher batting average because they can't take as many swings. And that's where, you know, the development of guys like Ike Butker, Ryan Bates, potentially somebody that they draft, will help them, you know, because next year they could save almost north of $8 million by getting rid of Mitch Morris with only 2.75 dead cap. That's pretty much a given, given the trajectory that they've gone on.
And if they did the restructure, it would be they would save the same amount. The dead money would just grow a little bit. His cap hit would obviously rise by the $3.02 million that I was talking about, but as would his dead cap. So it would, you're assigning more money to the cap next year, but teams are expecting a surge in 2022 when they hope things get back to normal. And so it's kind of just like kicking the can down the road, but you know, they would be in a better position to take that bigger type of dead money hit, which, by the way, the dead money hit that they would take next year, which would be around that $5 million mark, would essentially be the same thing as they would take on this year. So it's still the $8 million in savings to the 2022 cap. That's the most important part. So I just think it makes perfect sense for all parties. And, you know, they get to keep a starter. Love your idea of drafting a versatile interior lineman who's based at center, but someone that can move around. And that's usually the right range to draft one of those guys. And get yourself a right tackle in the first or second round, and you're trying to develop that depth and take a swing there, because, like you said, that's going to be a critical area for them moving forward, and to trying to find the right pieces, long term pieces, cheaper pieces that are good to help protect Josh Allen moving forward. I know we talked about tight end to lead off the show, and that was the thing you viewed to be the one thing that you think they had to come away with this offseason. I'll circle back to what I believe to be most important. And I know this was an idea that wasn't really viewed favorably when I posted it earlier this week. But in my mind, the most important thing that they need to do in this offseason, you know, granted that the cap is at least at $180 million, I think they need to franchise tag Matt Milano, because it doesn't sound like he's going to look to sign a long-term deal before he gets to free agency. Maybe he does get the free agency and realizes the market that he was expecting just isn't there for him. I tend to think it will be, but I think this defense is markedly worse without Matt Milano in there. And to me, by franchise tagging him, is it overpaying for 1 year where it's going to be around $15 million? His average valuation is probably going to end up somewhere around $12 to $13 million. Yes, it's going to be a slight overpay. However, the impact he provides on a defense, McDermott's comments about bringing the band back together as much as they can, his overall, I mean, he, without question, when he's on the field, he is one of the most talented players. He is one of their best players, and you just don't wave goodbye to those guys. Now, of course, they have to make the money work, and certainly they have to do a lot of different things. Like, they have to cut some players. John Brown would need to go, obviously. I think both Quentin Jefferson and Vernon Butler would have to go. I think Lee Smith would have to go. You would have to restructure a few contracts with, I think Mario Addison is a candidate to get restructured. Mitch Morse is a candidate. AJ Klein is another candidate to get restructured. But if you do those seven moves that I'm talking about, then, and it's at a $180 million cap, then they're going to be dealing with about $15 million or $25 million in cap space. And of course, the $15 million for Milano seems like a lot to associate to that. But the $25 million is also a little misleading because that goes to the top 51. So when you sign smaller term deals, they then get added, or smaller contracts, they get added to the top 51, and then you take the lowest contract in that top 51 out of the equation. So let's bring up the Feliciano contract that I threw out there. So if they get Feliciano back, and he is, and it's around a $3 million cap hit for that first year, let's say just $3.5 million. It's actually only about a $2.7 million cap hit because the lowest contract in the top 51 is $800,000. So it's not a flat $3.5 million. And then when you get to the lower contracts, like the one Ike Butker has to sign, if he signs for $900,000 for the next year, that's only an additional $100,000 hitting the cap. So that's why I think it's completely doable, and you can still do all of these different things. They would obviously have to hope that it hits for $185 million, but I think it's completely doable to re-sign John Feliciano, franchise tag Matt Milano, and re-sign guys like Butker, Wallace, Barkley, and who's the other restricted guy that I'm forgetting? Corey Bohorquez. And get those guys under contract, and then try and figure out a way to get to a tight end as well. I think that is all doable under a $180 million cap. But the most important thing here is that you keep a playmaking linebacker, and then you would delay the decision at linebacker. You would get one more year of evidence from Tremaine Edmonds. You would find out what the cap is going to be in 2022. And hey, if you get a pretty good inclination throughout the season that the cap is going to go up in 2022, then you can try to get to Matt Milano and sign him to a long-term deal. But you're on Josh Allen's rookie deal. You're on the final year of Tremaine Edmonds' rookie deal. So take advantage of those windows. Bring back Milano for one more year. Maybe draft a linebacker late and try and develop him. But you don't. Your team is a lot worse without Matt Milano. So to me, franchise tagging him and making sure that you keep the asset for one more year is the most important thing that I think they should do in the offseason. And I know it's not popular.
Yeah, I'm on the fence with Matt Milano, and I think it depends where the cap falls and what other moves they decide to make. That is sort of a foundational move, though. They have to decide, because I think that might be the way to get him back. I think he is, the way that they talked and, the way that, the fact that they didn't sign him to a long-term contract yet suggests that there's a chance he gets to free agency unless they, put that tag on him. I wonder if, maybe it's a one-year solution. So then you can draft somebody and feel better about replacing him that way. I don't know. I think he's a good player. I think he's one of their best players on defense. I think they're a much better defense with him on the field. I think they could survive without him. They had to at times this year. And I think it all depends for me where the cap falls and how much money they have, how much wiggle room they have, and what does that prevent them from doing? Short and long term, because I think getting some of that, keeping some of that cap space and having some room to add to the roster in other ways is valuable. It's a tough call because, like you said, he is so valuable to this defense and they are so much better when he's on the field. He wasn't on the field often enough this year, but that happens. I think he's been more durable than people think over his career. I don't think the injury issues are too drastic. You almost have to make a decision at some point who is going to be, you know, who do you commit to long term, him or Tremaine Edmonds? They could do both, but that's a lot of money to tie up into linebacker when you're also paying a quarterback big money and you've got a cornerback in Tre'Davious White who's taken up a good chunk of your cap space. So, yeah, I could see them using the tag, but that would handcuff them in other areas. And I don't know that, you know, we've seen their pattern is that if they want to get a long-term deal done, they don't let a guy go into that last year of his contract most times. You know, it's harder to get a long-term deal done when free agency is a month away for a guy and he can, you know, kind of look at the market and say, well, there's a chance I'm going to, you know, become very, very wealthy. So yeah, that's going to be a decision that I think has a domino effect on everything else. You know, one way or the other, I wouldn't blame them for letting him walk. If for no other reason, because you're not letting him walk for nothing. You're never letting a guy walk for nothing, even when it looks like you're letting him walk for nothing, because a compensatory pick could come back your way the following year. Same could be true if you keep him for a year and let him walk, you know, the following year. Mm-hmm. Another position that they haven't really drafted, right? You know, because they didn't really need to the last few years. But, you know, what could they find? Linebackers can play early and do well for you. So, you know, it'd be a gamble for sure to let him walk. There's no way around that because we've seen, you know, what happens when he's not on the field. But we also saw Travis Kelce have a heyday, you know, in the AFC Championship game. So, and that was with everybody on the field. So, yeah, I think there's ways to survive the loss. You know, we talked a lot about the big nickel position last year. That's one way to withstand a loss like that. Drafting another linebacker and platooning that guy with AJ Klein is a way to survive. But, you know, they haven't had a reason to use the franchise tag basically since they've been here. And this is definitely an opportunity and one that would make sense if they choose to go that route.
Yeah. And I don't think they should necessarily sign both Milano and Tremaine Edmonds to a long-term deal. Matt Milano is actually, for a guy who's just reaching the end of his rookie deal, he's actually kind of up there in age. He's going to turn 27 in late July. So if they were to do this one-year franchise tag, that gets you through his age 27 season, and he's 28 going into free agency. So at that point, you could probably feel pretty good saying, all right, let's get younger and focus on bringing back Tremaine Edmonds as the guy. And they could even, I mean, by franchise tagging him this year, that puts him on that bigger contract. Well, Edmonds is still on a lower contract. And then you just kind of flip-flop it next year to where Edmonds is on his fifth-year option, probably making around $12, $13 million. And for those that don't want the Bills to put the fifth-year option on Tremaine Edmonds, got some bad news for you. It's going to happen. I mean, they love him. They love him long-term. He's only turning 23 this offseason in May. Like, he's a big piece of their puzzle. Into the future, and they believe he still has a lot of room to grow at middle linebacker, which he does. He has shown flashes of brilliance, and you know, his 10-game stretch at the end of the year before the AFC Championship game was awesome. He was one of the best players on the field for them. However, you keep the best of both worlds for now, try and chase the window under the rookie quarterback contract, and that way, the same way with Morrison Feliciano, you have your cake and eat it too here. And yes, the $15 million franchise tag is steep, but you need to be able to have the ability to bring back your best players. And Milano was by leaps and bounds one of their best players. The defense was entirely different without him. You know, AJ Klein, he eventually became a fine starter, you know, maybe just replacement level starter. When he first got in the lineup, it was a mess. Let's not forget that. So to me, Milano is he's just that guy and that can help bring the defense to another level more consistently. And whenever Edmonds is struggling, Milano always seems to pick him up. He's making impact plays as a blitzer, as a tackler. He's instinctive against screens. Certainly can pick players up man to man in coverage. I think a big part of their difficulties against the Chiefs, specifically against Kelce, was more so to do with the lack of a pass rush than it was the zone coverage of the linebackers. But, you know, I guess better coverage would have given the defensive line more time, I guess. I guess it's just kind of a chicken or the egg sort of thing. But regardless, I think this whole team is much different without Matt Milano on it. And I also go back to something that Brandon Bean mentioned when he was talking about Matt Milano. He said, Matt knows we want him back. So if you are that convinced or that have that much conviction that you want to bring the guy back, I mean, what better way is there to do it than to assure yourself at least 1 year, give yourself another year of evaluation on Edmonds, and then kick the can down the road to 2022 when the cap is likely to go up. So, yeah, it's a big decision, but it's one I think they should do. And I think this would be a much worse team without him.
I'm curious to see what the franchise tag behavior is around the league in general. Typically, half the league maybe will use it, at least in the short term, maybe a little bit less than that most years. But in a year where that 1 year is a cap crunch, I wonder, you know, how many teams are going to feel the flexibility to use it. It might be an asset in a case of tagging a guy and then waiting until you have more space to really, you know, load up on a long-term contract. But the long-term contract might also be a way to save space in the short term. So, you know, like you said, $15 million is a big number for a guy. It's a tricky call. And I don't know that he's here for the long term, but yeah, they might view it as a chance to run it back, like you said, a chance to keep as much of the defense together as possible, considering that group's going to look a lot different in a few years. You know, they're going to have to make some guys are just getting older, frankly, you know, in the secondary.
Exactly.
Jerry Hughes and Mario Addison are both up there in age. So, you know, Matt Milano is one of the good young assets that they have, along with Tre'Davious White, Tremaine Edmonds, Ed Oliver. They hope AJ Epenesa, but outside of that, you know, you're not looking at too many, you know, quality rising young assets. And, you know, that's what makes it a tough decision. Is it would have been easier if the cap was what it was supposed to be. And this is one of those tough decisions that Brandon Bean talked about over and over at the end of the season that they didn't think they would have to make because of, you know, their situation. And, you know, it's possible it means a good player leaves. You know, there's also I don't think the locker room aspect of the franchise tag would be much of a problem. I don't think Matt Milano would necessarily care. $15 million is a good chunk of change. And I don't think, you know, it would cause too many, you know, problems with guys. You know, plenty of franchises use that tag. It's there for a reason. But, you know, I think if he were to hit the open market, he'd find a good payday. You know, I don't think.
Yeah, he's gone if he goes to the open market.
These, you know, some people think that because the cap's going down, there's not going to be a market for these guys and that they're going to want to delay free agency for a year. But I don't think so. There's enough teams with money to spend that, you know, he could get the contract that he's looking for and potentially come close to the top of the market at linebacker, given what he is and what the league looks for at that position. So, yeah, it'll be a tough call for Brandon Bean. And because they're not going to be very active in free agency, I don't know, you might get, what, like a third round pick back for him? You know, if in a comp pick, so which you could probably next year as well, depending on what his market looks like then. But all those things I'm sure that they'll consider, as well as probably looking deep into this linebacker class in the draft and figuring out if there's a guy maybe at the end of the first or in the second round that they feel they could, you know, get ready to play with AJ Klein. That's the other thing that, you know, they bring in AJ Klein, they love AJ Klein. So, you know, they're always anticipating things a year ahead, and how much of AJ Klein was wondering whether they could bring Matt Milano back. You know, they're the ones having those conversations with him and his reps, and the franchise tag option got a little trickier with the way the cap is. So that would certainly be, you know, it's probably the biggest domino in terms of what else they can do. You know, all of a sudden the tight end becomes a bit of a luxury, and you have to drop down a tier probably of what you'd want, or, you know, you have to let somebody else go or make one extra cut or one extra restructure. So that's the biggest number that they'll spend potentially this offseason, is that franchise tag.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think for them, it really boils down to, what do you covet more out of this offseason? The potential to bring back and I'm a big comp pick guy. I think everybody knows that about me. Bringing back a third round pick in 2022, or bringing back an impact linebacker for a potential Super Bowl run. I think, you know, the money is definitely a consideration, but the offense can kind of go with what you had last year, but the defense is what let them down quite a few times. And you want to be able to bring back, quite frankly, he was their best defensive player. I'm prepared to say that in 2020, he was the best guy that they had. And he was up there throughout 2019 as well, when he made his big jump in production and ability and everything like that. So I think McDermott is probably banging the table to say, we need to bring this guy back, no matter what it means. And for Bean and the way he builds his roster, I think the easiest way to do it, to not have a significant long-term impact, would be that tag, as jarring as that number might be. So we'll see what they do. They have to make their decision by March 9th at 4 p.m., which is still the date to issue the franchise and transition tags. But yes, they certainly need to try and figure that out. And once they decide on Milano, then the rest of their offseason will take shape. But yes, well, it is, like you said, the biggest domino without question.
Yeah, I think as I sit here right now, I think they can survive without him, if it means paying $15 million. And we'll see how open he is to a long-term deal and all that. But yeah, the clock is ticking for sure. And, you know, it got a little bit more difficult when they got crunched for space. But we also don't know the space at this point. So, you know, there's still some questions up in the air. And this is that tough stage of the rebuild that we talked about a few weeks ago, when you have to fit some puzzle pieces together. That gets a little bit trickier when you're in this spot.
Mm-hmm. Most certainly. All right, that'll do it for us. And yeah, another big off-season moves episode, and we'll have more of that as we get forward. We're only in mid-February right now. We still have about a month before the new league year takes shape. And so we'll have much more as we get closer to that. In addition to some draft talk, it's about that time of year where we start to get into things. And, you know, Dane Brugler over at The Athletic just put together his latest mock draft, which had the Bills moving up. So you haven't if you haven't checked that out, be sure to go do that. Matthew Fairburn wrote about the pick and the specific pick, the idea of trading up. And his analysis on that. So make sure you check that out as well. I've begun my positional series of reviewing each spot. Started off with linebacker earlier this week. Offensive line just got posted a couple of minutes ago. And we'll be going through piece by piece, giving scouting reports, analysis, and recommendations for the offseason based on their cap structure and what their team is looking like, and maybe even some potential for the future for these players. So you can find that, all of that, over at The Athletic. And you can go to theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat right now and get yourself a nice little savings for a yearly subscription. So yeah, all that and more. And Matthew Fairburn, I have to say congratulations, because your boy is a Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, that was a big topic of conversation in my mentions. Not just on Sunday night when he became a Super Bowl champion, but this morning after Jason Light said that he thinks Blaine Gabbert could eventually be the successor to Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Which I, you know, tongue in cheek sent a tweet out on Sunday night. And little did I know it was somewhat clairvoyant in nature, because Jason Light said, you know, he really thinks that he would have opened some eyes this year if he had been forced to play more. And, you know, he thinks he's super talented, loves his energy, all this stuff. So I don't know. It could be the ultimate show of perseverance here for Blaine Gabbert. He was very strategic about his placement in all the party videos from the parade. He was right there next to his guy, Tom Brady. He was posting some outrageous things on Instagram that I don't think he thinks were outrageous, but he was doing that. He was on television quite a bit during the Super Bowl, and he made an appearance in the Mic'd Up. So big week for Blaine Gabbert.
Wow, it all comes full circle for you, and for all these years that you have been crushing our souls with Blaine Gabbert mentions, he's now a Super Bowl champion, and you're the one laughing. So good for you. It's a big day for you.
It's really, you know, there's a reason it's the Blaine Gabbert Perseverance Award, and he showed that on Sunday.
All right. Well, on that note, I think we will bid you all adieu. So the next time we will speak, we'll get more into some of the off-season decisions that they could make as we get closer to the start of the new league year. And who knows, by the time we record next, they could have already made a cut or two. There was already one big veteran player that was released by his team, Tyrell Williams, getting released by the Raiders. So we will see if one of those happens. And once they do, we'll start to analyze what they could do with those funds and, you know, contract restructures. It's getting to be around that time where the Bills have to start to make some decisions. All right. So for Matthew Fairburn, my name is Joe Biscaglia. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Buffalo Beat. And we will talk to you on our next episode. See you then.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.